The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening on this rainy July, late July, mid-July afternoon. We're here on the Hoosier Huddle podcast talking Big East football. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. We'll be joined by co-host TJ Inman here in a little bit. We'll talk the Big Ten East, just like we did the Big Ten West on Monday, go through who we think will be champion, where we think everybody will finish, where IU fits into this whole thing, and what we are looking for. TJ, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, Sammy. Good to be talking about IU's division. If we're experts at anything, it would be the Big Ten East.
Yeah, you'd certainly hope so. We've watched enough Big Ten football and Big Ten East football so far to maybe know what we're talking about a little bit. TJ, I don't know if you had this issue. To me, this was a head over heart or heart over head decision. Very difficult to pick the winner of the Big Ten East. It's a super competitive conference. The schedules of each team that could contend for the title are kind of weird. They kind of even themselves out. Keep in fact that your non-conference record does not count towards a conference championship or division championship. Let's get started, TJ. I'll go through my seven first. I have Michigan winning the Big Ten East. I'll go over that in a little bit and give my rationale. I have Ohio State coming in second, Michigan State third, Penn State. I think it would be a tie between Penn State and Indiana for fourth and fifth, and then rounding out, I'll have Rutgers and then Maryland in seventh. How about you?
Yeah, we are we're very closely aligned there. I also have Michigan coming out as champions of the Big Ten East. Then I've got Ohio State, Michigan State. I placed Indiana fourth, Penn State fifth, but I do think that that's going to be pretty much a stone-cold tie between those two. Optimistically, I would say that would be at either 4-5 or 5-4. And I put Indiana into that spot just because they're hosting Penn State. So Penn State fifth, and then I went with Maryland at six, Rutgers at seven. The rationale there being, well, I don't really have one between those two. They're very much. I would say that there's a clear, in my opinion, kind of a clear tiered system in the Big Ten East that you don't have in the West. You've got Michigan, Ohio State at the top two. I see it as kind of a middle three. I see Michigan State, Indiana, and Penn State in a tier, with Michigan State being above Indiana and Penn State. Michigan State's closer to IU and Penn State than they are Ohio State and Michigan this season. And then the bottom two being Maryland and Rutgers. But that's what I had, so we can get into the individual teams. And I guess we'll talk about the team that we had as the champ. We'll talk about Michigan first.
Yeah, the reason I put Michigan, I was going back and forth to myself on this. The reason I put Michigan, I think they're an absolutely loaded team, even though they're going to have a new quarterback. We saw what Jim Harbaugh did with Jake Rudock last year. I think he has more to work with and more time to work with John O'Korn and Wilton Spate. Whoever wins that, I do believe that John O'Korn will win that, but he's had more time under Harbaugh than Rudock. I think he has more, you know, gifted talent than Rudock. So I think they'll be just fine at quarterback. They do return. Their defense is going to be nasty. They have a couple good corners. Jabril Peppers is going to be a pain in the butt at that hybrid safety linebacker spot. You know, rushing the passer. And if you guys watch Boston College at all, last year, Michigan brings in their defensive coordinator, and they use pressure a lot. So whoever's going up against Michigan, their quarterback's not going to have a good day. It's going to be a tough day, one where you're going to have to buckle the chin strap and strap on the ice bags after the game. But mm-hmm. Michigan's absolutely loaded. You know, their defensive line brings back three seniors. You have Taco Charlton, Chris Wormley, and Brian Glasgow. You have another junior nose tackle in Maurice Hurst, Jabril Peppers, Jordan Lewis, who's a terrific, terrific corner. I believe we had him as number one on our opponent's cornerback list as well. And we haven't even gotten TJ to the wide receivers and the tight ends. Jake Butt is by far the best tight end in the conference. He absolutely killed IU the last couple of years. And then you bring in J.U. Chesson and Amara Darbo in at wide receiver. So I just think there's too much talent. Although they end the year at Ohio State, I think that the whooping Ohio State put on last year, Harbaugh's not going to let that happen again. And I think they're going to go into Ohio Stadium and clinch the Big Ten East in Columbus.
I would agree with you. There are some question marks, and the primary ones that I have, number one, the linebackers. They lost a lot from their linebacking core last year, which was very strong. I kind of think the linebacker is a position that Michigan's going to be able to figure out. You mentioned they bring in Don Brown, former Boston College defensive coordinator. He's very well respected, very aggressive defense, and you know, I doubt very many people watched Boston College last season. There wasn't much reason to, but their defense was not the reason that they were awful. Their offense was putrid. The defense kept them in a lot of games and gave them a chance to even be competitive. Don Brown, he's a very good defensive coordinator, and I think he'll fill in really well. The trio of Darbo, Chesson, and Butt, very difficult for defenses to cope with. Number one, they're really good, but they're big physically. I mean, they're just very tough for defensive backs to match up with and very tough for any linebacker to cover Jake Butt. Offensive line is really strong. Grant Newsome, Ben Braden, Mason Cole, Kyle Callis, Eric Magnuson. I mean, three of those five could end up on the All-Big Ten team. I think that two is probably a realistic thing for them to get on the first team. They've got really good talent and experience there. The defensive line, you mentioned those guys, but another one that's number one recruit in the country, Rashawn Gary, defensive tackle, he's going to be joining that group as well. They don't have to play him right away, but he's going to be on the field. I mean, he's not going to start more than likely, but he's going to start the season as part of that rotation and be able to kind of be fresh because they're not going to have to play guys all game. I think it's a really good physical group. And then schedule-wise, you're right. I mean, the game at Ohio State is a cause for doubt because those two are to battle each other for the division title. But beyond that, I mean, home games against Penn State, Wisconsin, Illinois, Maryland, and IU. Are they going to lose any of those? I doubt it. I really doubt it. I don't see any of those teams going in there. No.
And they play.
None of those teams are going into Big House. The Rutgers,
Their non-conference schedule is very soft as well. So if you are looking at Michigan as a playoff team, they're going to have to probably go undefeated as they play Hawaii, UCF, and Colorado. Mm-hmm. It's not the cream of the crop of non-conference opponents. And then, as you alluded to, that trip to Michigan State Michigan State's had their number for the last about a decade now. So those, it's going to come down to those two games. Can they get over the hump at Michigan State? Can they, you know, put the nail in the coffin of Ohio State on the last game of the year? So that's what it comes down to schedule-wise. It's very navigable besides those two games.
Yeah, their first six are at home. They don't leave Ann Arbor until October 8th. I mean, their first away game is October 8th against Rutgers. So,
yeah, they leave.
It doesn't get a lot better than that.
No, they leave the state of Michigan once, you know, before November. So a very Florida-ish type of schedule.
Yes.
Next, we'll go to Ohio State.
One more thing. I forgot to talk about their running backs. I did want to mention De'Veon Smith. Not a standout guy, but a steady running back. They also have Derek Green and Ty Isaac coming back. One player or even two players to watch, recruits that they brought in, the top-rated running back in the 2016 class, Kareem Walker. You know, he's not considered to be on the level of a couple of other, you know, recent number one running backs to come in, guys like Leonard Fournette. He's not considered to be on that level, but still, Kareem Walker considered a difference maker in that backfield that can come in, give them maybe 5 to 10 carries, and they're not going to redshirt him. He's going to be seeing some game time. Then the other one is Kingston Davis, more of a change of pace back, real shifty, four-star guy. So not on the level of Kareem Walker, but Kingston Davis, another good piece. So even if they're passing game, even if they have some growing pains at quarterback with John O'Korn, which I don't expect just because of Harbaugh's track record with the passing game. But even if they do have some of those issues, that offensive line and that running game can just bludgeon you if they need to. So, we can move on to Ohio State, but there's some question marks with Michigan, but they've got a whole lot of answers and really good coaching staff, navigable schedule. I see them as having fewer question marks than Ohio State, which is why I took them. I feel they're the safer pick, considering that they bring back more. The incoming talent plugging into their holes might not be quite as good as Ohio State's on paper, but I think that there's enough there for them to get the job done and get Michigan to the Big Ten title game.
Agree. And now moving on to Ohio State, we won't spend too much time on the Buckeyes, but they're Ohio State. They have as much talent as anybody in the country, but they do lose Ezekiel Elliott. They lost, I believe, 11 draft picks from last year. They have to replace Joey Bosa. They have to replace Eli Apple. Von Bell, guys like that. But they do have the ace in the hole, TJ, to me, and the guy who actually put them, you know, who made it a debate, and that's JT Barrett. And JT Barrett should be in the running for the Heisman Trophy. He's an outstanding dual-threat quarterback. I thought they mishandled that quarterback competition last year, and it really, really hurt them. I thought, you know, you didn't see them in a good rhythm. They turned the ball over a lot, and then it all came to fruition against Michigan State. It cost them a spot in the playoff game before they could get running on all cylinders against Michigan and then against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. But this is still a very, very talented team. They're going to bring back, you know, they bring in Mike Weber, who's going to be a redshirt freshman. Briante Dunn, who's a senior but hasn't really lived up to that very good recruiting ranking that he came in with. Curtis Samuel is the H-back. He's pretty good, but still has not lived up to that hype that he came in with. And then you have Noah Brown, who's back from injury. That was a big loss last year. And then you have two good linemen in Pat Elflein and Billy Price. But to me, the schedule is really difficult for them. They have to go to Oklahoma, travel to Wisconsin, at Penn State, and at Michigan State, and Maryland in there as well. But to me, this is a tougher schedule than they played the last couple of years. They're going to get a real – we'll know where they are. They play Bowling Green and Tulsa, too, which are two good offenses. So we'll know where they stand after September 17th, whether or not this team has what it takes to make it through the Big Ten East and come out and get to another Big Ten championship game and possibly another playoff game. To say this, though, they could lose to Oklahoma, run the table, and make the playoff game or make the
yep.
playoffs. But if they go undefeated, this team should be ranked either one or two in the country, depending upon what Alabama does. But that's my
yeah.
take on Ohio State.
Yeah, I think you mentioned really the key piece on offense is JT Barrett. The key piece on defense also returns Raekwon McMillan. He was the leading tackler a year ago. He's either one or two in terms of defensive player of the year coming in the Big Ten. Maybe one, two, or three, if you want to make the argument with Peppers and Walker from Northwestern, and then McMillan. Those are the three guys for that spot. Sam Hubbard steps in, defensive end. They've got high hopes for him. And then Gary and Conley, the only guy in the secondary returning. I mean, these guys, six returning starters. So really any talk about them outside of Barrett and McMillan is – kind of really speculative. I mean, I think Noah Brown has potential to be an absolute star at wide receiver. He's got all the physical tools you look for, all the measurables you look for. He's a big target. I think he could be the number one wide receiver, possibly in the conference here after or heading in the next season, because a lot of the top wide receivers this year are probably going to be going pro, but questions for them are going to be on the lines. They lost quite a bit on the offensive line. Elfline's very, very good, but there's a lot of question marks filling in there. They still don't know who their starting five is going to be at this time. Then the defensive line, you lost pretty much everybody up front. So I'm not sure what's going to happen there. I think they could be susceptible to some good ground games, which Oklahoma's definitely going to test them there. You know, I think that Briante Dunn, Curtis Samuel, and Mike Weber will be fine as running backs, but the best runner on this team is JT Barrett, and none of these guys, whoever they find at running back, is going to be Ezekiel Elliott. They're not going to have the capability to just take a game over, as we saw Elliott do on more than one occasion during his time in Columbus. So I like the potential that they have. I think they're going to be significantly better at the end of the year than they will at the start of the year. We saw that last year even, and that was a fully experienced group. And they got a lot better heading into the end of the season, part of that being because they finally went to Barrett. But he's going to have to really be Superman, I think, to have Ohio State in the playoff conversation once again, and I don't really see it. I see them losing two or three games, still being very, very good, but I think they drop Oklahoma. I think they lose to Michigan, and then I think it's possible that they can lose one of their road games, even though I don't think highly of Wisconsin or Penn State or Maryland. I think it's possible they could drop one on the road. Just it's hard to win on the road, so...
yeah, they also go to Michigan State.
Yeah, slightly off year for Urban Meyer's squad, but even those slightly off years mean that they're still going to be first or second in the Big Ten East. So no reason to worry about the program or anything like that. It's just really hard to contend for national title when you send as many guys as they did to the NFL.
Yeah, and you saw that with LSU and the SEC when they kept – it's
yeah.
tough to reload when all these juniors go to the NFL. Next up, Michigan State, TJ. It's another team who's been really good for the last handful of years. And, you know, they lose their starting quarterback. And this is a theme throughout the Big Ten East is replacing starting quarterbacks. You have a new starter, well, sort of new – But welcome back, JT Barrett. You're going to have a new starter at Michigan, a new starter at Michigan State, a new starter at Penn State, and a new starter at Indiana. So, you know, five out of the seven teams are going to have new starters. So Michigan State, I think they're going to take a drop off this year. You know, Connor Cook was very, very good for them. I wasn't high on him as a quarterback in general, but he was very good for them. He won a lot of games. They lose a lot on defense. Shalique Calhoun is gone, but they do return Malik McDowell and Demetrius Cox on defense. So they're still going to be a nasty defense, but the big question is who's their quarterback. And right now, projected starter is Tyler O'Connor. He came in a couple games, and if you go back to, I believe, 2013, when after Kirk Cousins graduated, O'Connor was in the mix with Connor Cook to take over that starting position, and then ultimately lost the job, and the rest is history, as Connor Cook won two Big Ten titles, Rose Bowl, and made the playoff last year. So where do you see Michigan State taking a step back, finishing third here in the Big Ten?
Yeah, you mentioned Connor Cook winning a lot of games, 34-5 as a starter. So, he had a lot of help to get that done, but Connor Cook is going to be missed dearly by that program. I think you're right. Tyler O'Connor looks like he's going to beat out Damian Terry. Terry's the more mobile of the two. O'Connor, the more traditional passer. That you kind of picture in the Michigan State offense, but I think wide receiver takes a big step back. Aaron Burbridge and McGarrett Kings Jr. both gone. R.J. Shelton is the guy that comes back. He was their third leading receiver last year. He's going to have to be the number one guy now, and I don't think he really has the traditional body type to get that done. A little bit more of a smaller slot type guy. Felton Davis showed some flashes that he could help, and then they've got a true freshman by the name of Donnie Corley that has gotten a lot of praise from both the coaching staff and from kind of outside people that saw him in practice and saw him in a spring game and are hyping him up quite a bit as being somebody that could start day one. So the running game, Elgin Scott's the best of the three. They have also Madre London. And Gerald Holmes is kind of the big back that they look to in short yardage situations. I don't think Holmes has been quite what they expected, but Scott and London were good as freshmen. They need to improve the yards per carry a little bit, improve the efficiency, and that could be tough to do because the offensive line, which for me is the biggest concern for their offense, they lost Jack Allen, they lost Jack Conklin, they've got to replace three starters overall. That's hard to do. And this is not a program that, I mean, yes, they have definitely lost stars and replaced them before, but not a program that traditionally just reloads without even noticing anything. There tends to have to be a tiny bit of a rebuild, definitely not dropping down to fighting for bowl eligibility, but just a little bit. The defense should be good. Six starters, Riley Bull is back. You mentioned Demetrius Cooper. Evan Jones is going to be the other end. I think the secondary is going to be the strength of that defense. Should have three starters back, plus Fayonte Copeland would have been a starter last year, but he got hurt very early. He's coming back from a neck injury. So really, you could say four starters back in the secondary. So facing a division that is replacing a lot of quarterbacks, that it could be a real stout pass defense. I think that overall, the schedule is not bad. They're cross-division games. Wisconsin, Northwestern, Illinois. Wisconsin and Northwestern are both at home. They go to Illinois, and then you get both Michigan and Ohio State at home. So it's really about as good as it could be. Their non-conference is pretty tough. They face BYU and they face Notre Dame, so that's going to be hard. For them overall record-wise, but just in terms of the division, I think that these guys could still go 7-2 in the division despite being a step below what they were last season. So overall, it's going to be a good year for the Spartans when you take into account kind of what they're typically expected to be as a program, but I think it will be a step back from what they've been the past couple years.
Yeah, and you know, another team, TJ, coming up next is Penn State, is could take a step back as well, and you know, it just seems like the Big Ten as a whole might take a step back, but Penn State, they've been in the news lately. There's more stuff coming out about who knew what happened with the Sandusky stuff. It's just, you know, as putting the politics of it aside, for this team who had nothing to do with it, to my knowledge, there's no assistants on the staff who were with them, and no, obviously no players, but it's just another distraction for this team this year. To get in their way, breaking in a new quarterback, replacing a couple stellar defensive linemen. They do have, you know, one of the better running backs, probably the best running back in the Big Ten in Saquon Barkley. They have a plethora of receivers highlighted by Deshaun Hamilton and Chris Godwin. But this is a team I see taking another step back because Trace McSorley, he had a nice bowl game, but what has he done? He didn't do much last year. You know, he completed 50% of his passes, had 2 touchdowns and 185 yards. You know, he managed the bowl game against Georgia well. That's great. But what can he do when the bright lights are on? James Franklin, I think the Penn State fan base is getting a little frustrated with him. He's going into his third year now. He was 7-6 is both his first 2 years, which is, you know, 2 bowl games but it's Penn State and fans want it to be back to where they're a top, you know, top 20 team, top 15 team, vying for these big bowls and playing with Michigan and Ohio State and Michigan State. And now they've, as you said, those 3 tiers, they've fallen into that middle tier. And, you know, this is a team who, when they come to Indiana on November 12th, is going to have a fight on their hands. And this is a team that has only lost to Indiana once in the history of their program. And, you know, this fan base could get restless, and how do they react to that? And it's just such a storm of stuff in Happy Valley. That, to me, is what's going to keep them down.
Yeah, I think you said 7-6 has been okay, and that's true. It has been, particularly when you consider the sanctions and the scholarship productions and things that they did not have. This particular team did not have complete control over. So 7-6 can be considered okay, but Penn State doesn't want okay. You know, they don't want to be okay at football. They want to be good. They want to be great. And right now that's not happening under James Franklin. I think the people in State College, it seems to me, reading a couple of their different Penn sites, the people on the fan sites, we can't generalize and say their whole fan base because we don't know. But the people that are commenting on those sites seem to start to be viewing him as a salesman as opposed to a good head coach. There's always been questions about his in-game management, and I think now there are kind of some questions about schemes. They lost defensive coordinator Bob Shoup to the same position at Tennessee, so he leaves Penn State, goes to Tennessee. He got a pay raise in Penn State, but it was more of a case that I think he was looking at it as a step up to go to Tennessee as opposed to be at Penn State. And it's going to be hard for them to replace Bob Shoup because he was considered very, very good. Joe Moorhead comes in an offensive coordinator. I think that is at the very least, it'll shake things up, and I think that's going to be really good for their offense. I thought their play calling the past couple of years was really suspect. The offensive line, it's been well documented, it's not a strength at all. It should be better, if nothing else, because they've got more bodies there. They're up to 17 scholarship players along the offensive line. When James Franklin got there, they had 9. So they're building up the numbers there. So just by numbers, they should be at least better on the offensive line, but it's just looking at the personnel, it's still not going to be a strength. The D-line really got hurt by dissections, graduation and to early entry into the draft. Carl Nassib, Austin Johnson, Anthony Zettel, all gone, all drafted fairly early in the draft. Garrett Sickles is going to be the guy that they hope has, you know, the big-time jump like we saw from Nassib. That seems unlikely. He could be good, but it really seems unlikely to take the same jump that Nassib did. Should be pretty good at linebacker. Brandon Bell, Jason Kabinda, Wortman White are good. The secondary will be fine. I really like Saquon Barkley, and I think he can be, like you said, either the best or the second best back in the Big Ten, depending on how you view Justin Jackson versus him. The passing game, the receivers are good, but, McSorley's going to be a little bit more mobile than Hackenberg was, which is not hard. That's a low bar to clear. And Tommy Stevens, if they go with him, same thing. He'll be a bit more mobile. Joe Moorhead's scheme, supposedly kind of a West Coast offense that utilizes some quarterback mobility. I think that they'll be a little bit more interesting to watch this year, but I don't view the overall talent as being up to the level of the first three. And I think that that probably is really grating to Penn State fans that Michigan's taking this jump up, Ohio State is taking this jump up, and Michigan State has, you know, consistently been better than they are under D'Antonio. So I think that's rubbing them the wrong way, and if it's another kind of average season in State College, you will start to hear the pressure get turned up on Franklin.
Yeah, definitely. And, their quarterback now should fit their offense a little bit better. Next up,
yeah.
And we'll spend a little bit more time on this, Indiana. We have them and Penn State almost about even, probably in a tie in that 4-5 spot. This offense is absolutely loaded, DJ. It came out today. They announced the Biletnikoff Award watch list. Ricky Jones and Simi Cobbs are on it. You had Mitchell Page on the Werfel list for community service. He's a really good complimentary receiver in the slot. And punt returner, you're going to have Divine Redding back, it looks like. You're going to have a stable of running backs with Majette and, Ricky Brookins and those guys, and a couple of incoming freshmen as well. Just this offense could do so much. You have Jordan Fuchs at tight end, and it's going to come down to what can Richard Legault do? Is he a guy who you just have to get the ball to these playmakers? You don't have to air it out 45 times a game and throw for 600 yards. Run the ball 30, 40 times, throw the ball, 30 times, 35 times, have a balanced attack. And it seems like the philosophy when we were at spring practice, TJ, was that they want guys who can play all over the field. You saw Brookins playing in the slot. You saw Devontae Williams back at running back playing in the slot. And guys like that who, you can go on these supersonic speed drives where you don't have to substitute, and you could really wear down these defenses. So, I think Indiana is – their schedule is tough being in the East. Their non-conference schedule is very manageable. That opening game at FIU is going to be a tough one. But it's a team that they should beat. They're more talented than FIU, but opening on the road in the Florida heat, which will probably just be like what it is today – hopefully without the late afternoon thunderstorm, but you probably guarantee it's going to rain at some point when we're down there. But, you have FIU Ball State at home a week off before Wake Forest, and that bye week is, I think it's kind of a blessing. You go through your first two games with the new quarterback, see what's working, see what needs to be improved, use that bye week to to tweak some things with whoever's at quarterback. I suspect it's going to be Legault, but offensively, this team is going to be as good as any in the Big Ten if they could get their quarterback play. Now, the big question is defense. Can this defense get out of the basement? And I think they can if they could get some defensive line play. You see, you know, they lose a lot on the defensive line in Zach Shaw, Nick Mangieri, and Darius Latham. But you got Ralph Green and Nate Hoff, guys who had underperformed the last year, who have shown very, very good potential, winning awards as freshmen for their performances and being freshmen all Big Ten members. So if those guys step up, play like they've shown they can play, and be that those monsters in the middle, kind of like Adam Rapoglou and Larry Black Jr. were in 2011, and then you could get some of these guys on the edge, you know, moving over to defensive end, like Greg Gooch and Jacob Robinson, and maybe getting Robert McCray in there as well along the defensive line. And they're absolutely stacked at linebacker too. So don't be surprised if you see somebody move positions at linebacker. They're going to that 4-2-5 defense, two linebackers, but they're stacked with Marcus Oliver, T. Gary Scales. You're going to have T.J. Simmons back. So don't be surprised if you see a guy move positions, because they're loaded with athletes there. The secondary will look a lot different in terms of positioning. You're going to have Jamie Thompson play the Husky position, junior college transfer, which is that hybrid safety linebacker position. And then you're probably going to have Tyler Green and Richard Fant at your corners. And we saw Green in spring practice. He's a longer guy. He played some last year, but he's very talented, and he gives the Hoosiers that the size they need at corner to play some of these bigger receivers. And then, you know, you're going to have Chase Dutra, Jonathan Crawford at safety, at free and strong safety. Jonathan Crawford, very, very good player, 4 interceptions last year, 3rd leading tackler on the team. And then Chase Dutra, if he could stay healthy, is a very, very quality safety as well. And then you have Griffin Oaks shoring up your special teams on kickoffs and field goals. The place where IU probably needs to pick it up a little bit besides the defense is in the return game on kicks. Can they get some easy yardage, not easy yardage, but could they make it a little bit easier for this offense, getting returns out past the 40 into opponent's territory and not have to make this offense drive the length of the field in order to get points? So that's my take on IU in this division. And their schedule is pretty manageable in the Big Ten. They get their tough games on the road, Ohio State, Rutgers, Michigan, and Northwestern. At home, you get Michigan State, Nebraska, Maryland, Penn State, and Purdue. All those games, to me, I think they have a better than decent shot of being in it, having a chance to win at the end.
Yeah, I think you know, we'll get into each of IU's personnel groups and all that much more in depth as we get closer to the season. But just from a bird's eye view perspective on it, I think that one of the things that's the most intriguing about this group is when you look at the running backs and wide receivers, there are so many guys that can do different things. You've got a lot of different types of players, guys like Mike Majette, Devontae Williams, that are kind of your explosive backs, guys like Divine Redding, maybe Tyler Natie, that are, you know, big bruisers. And they're not just big bruisers. I mean, we know that Divine Redding can move as well. He can be shifty, and he can pick up yardage when presented with the open field. He can make guys miss. But, you know, I don't think he's somebody you'd describe as electric. So you've also got, you know, some pieces that you're not sure where they're going to fit in Cole Guest. You know, a guy that maybe ends up returning kicks, maybe ends up playing some slot, maybe ends up at some running back some. Same with Ricky Brookins, maybe at slot, maybe a little running back. You know, Kimeon Patrick, a player that the coaching staff was extremely high on. He's coming back from an injury that they're hoping, timeline-wise, that he'll be able to be back and ready to go for the Big Ten season. You know, we certainly hope that it's earlier than that. You know, maybe he can have a quick recovery and get back and be ready to go maybe right after the bye week or something. But he's a player that it seems as if the coaching staff believes, and based on what we've seen just in little highlight snippets and things like that, so, you know, take it with a big old box of salt. But it seems like he can be a difference maker in the backfield, a guy that can hit home runs for you every time he touches the ball, and kind of just reminds you of Tevin Coleman a little bit in the way that if he hits the open field, 6 points.
He's kind of like a hybrid between Howard and Coleman, where he won't be afraid to run you over either, and he could blow by you. So, you know, he's kind of the best of both worlds, and he's a player that I'm really excited to see play if he does come back, when and if he comes back.
Absolutely. But next, quickly,
let's get to the bottom two teams in the Big Ten. I went with Rutgers finishing sixth. I just think they're, you know, both them and Maryland are on that lower tier right now. Both had coaching changes. Both schools on the East Coast in hot recruiting beds. So, you know, this could be a quick fix. It could be a long fix if they don't recruit well, but they has the potential to be a quick quality fix for both of these schools. But I'm going to put Rutgers at six. I do think they're a little bit more talented on paper right now. They do lose Leonte Carew. Thank goodness he's gone, because I still have nightmares about him from last year. But they have two very, very good running backs in Robert Martin and Josh Hicks. They return a quarterback, Chris Laviano, who's not bad. He's not great, but he's not bad. And then you have Janarian Grant at wide receiver, who's a very dynamic punt returner and kick returner as well. This offensive line is decent, decent enough. The defense, you're going to get Darius Hamilton back. He's a former five-star recruit. And, you know, I think this defense, although they lose Steven Longa, their leading tackler from last year, they do return some talent. I just think they have more talent on paper than Maryland. But their schedule is very difficult. They open up at Washington on the road.
Yeah.
So you'll get right off the bat, see where this team is at. And then you got to go to Ohio State, to Minnesota, which isn't easy, and then Michigan State and at Maryland. Maryland beat them last year, but the last time at Maryland, Rutgers made an outstanding comeback and won that game. So I think that Rutgers wins enough games to stay ahead of Maryland due to their talent.
I chose Maryland at six. We'll talk about them in just a second. But, you know, Rutgers does return more starters than the Terps. They return 15 starters for the new coach, Chris Ash. I like the running backs. Chris Laviano, the concern with him for me is he had 19 turnovers a year ago. That is way too many. He's got to cut down on that. Ideally, you'd see him get that down somewhere to like 10s, maybe cut that close to in half for this offense to take a step forward. The receivers are fine. Andre Patton, Janarian Grant, Carlton Agudosi, you know, they're adequate, but that's not a group that's going to be great. The offense will be carried by the two running backs, Martin and Hicks, and the offensive line, which, you know, needs to get better. Give up too high of a sack rate, but there's some talent there. There's some returning pieces there. They do get back defensive linemen that should help them some, but they replace all three starters at linebacker, and those guys were the top three tacklers in 2015. The defense was 13th in total defense last year in the Big Ten, so only IU was worse. And now they lose the top three tacklers and have to replace all the linebackers. So that's my concern for them. Plus, they go to Maryland, so Maryland gets to host them, and they draw Iowa out of the West as well. So whereas Maryland gets to host Rutgers, and I look at them. They only bring back 12 starters. They have a decent trio of running backs, Ty Johnson, the Virginia Tech transfer, Trey Edmonds, and then Wes Brown. It looked like he was off the team, but the indefinite suspension is apparently over, and it looks like Wes Brown is, I mean, he's still on the roster. He worked out with them in the spring, and DJ Durkin talked about him. If he does the right things, whatever the heck that means, then Wes Brown's going to be able to play for the Terrapins. Just, three starters on the offensive line back for them. Their recruiting rankings have been better than what they performed at, so they need to start playing like they were rated at in high school. The big problem for Maryland is, of course, the passing game. I mean, it was just awful, comical at times, their inability to complete a pass more than like 10 yards down the field. And I don't really see how it would improve all that much because they bring back the same guys. I mean, Perry Hills and Caleb Rowe are the guys battling for the spot. The new OC, Walt Bell, comes from Arkansas State. They ran the ball on 70% of standard downs last year. So he runs kind of a spread option, up-tempo attack, and I think Perry Hills fits that better. He's the better runner of the two. I mean, they were only 81st in offense in 2015. I think that improves somewhat just because of the increased tempo. I think they'll commit to just spread option football, which, you know, if that can get rolling in a game, that can give somebody some problems. But another advantage for Maryland that Rutgers doesn't have, so they're hosting Purdue, they're hosting Rutgers. That's why I took them at 6 and Rutgers at 7, but you can flip a coin with those two. I think that they are the two weakest teams in the division. They'll be playing each other for 6 versus 7, and neither's going to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, the final word, they play 6 home games. They'll play at FIU and at UCF in back-to-back weeks. The schedule really does not work out in their favor other than that they get their matchup games at home Rutgers and in Purdue. I think they're just so far off. Just watching them last year and watching Perry Hills, or he didn't play, watching Caleb Rowe and watching Perry Hills in games beforehand, it just didn't instill a lot of confidence in me to put them at 6.
No.
But they are in a recruiting hotbed. They do have a new coach, DJ Durkin, and we'll see what they could do. But, you know, it might come down to that last game, the East Coast rivalry game, so to speak, against Rutgers, to see if we were correct, which one of us was correct on Maryland and Rutgers. But, TJ, we are out of time as usual. It goes super quick when we're talking football. But we'll be back next week. We'll start going over our Big Ten Media Days are coming up, questions we want to ask and have answered, questions that IU has as a team going into Media Days. It's one of the landmark days in the college football calendar. So we'll be back next week. TJ, have a great evening. Hopefully the power stays on.
Yeah, storms let up some here. My dog is still pretty nervous, but it's let up, not near as windy or rainy. So hopefully everybody stays safe. Always fun talking football. We're getting ready. All this preview stuff definitely has me excited to actually watch some games from this season as opposed to constantly rewinding and thinking about what might be. I'm ready to see what's going to happen.
Yep. Me too over here. We'll see you next week. Check us out on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Don't forget to load us and rate us on iTunes, HoosierHuddle.com, and the podcast is Inside the Huddle on iTunes. So thanks for joining us. We'll post this up on the website shortly, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.